I'm Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie. And with us in the studio here is Mike Folkerts from the NTSB.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Thanks, guys.
That's great. You're working a program for the NTSB on trying to improve us pilots.
That's correct.
How's it going?
It's going very well. We're really trying to improve professionalism. We know that's such a big issue with a lot of the accidents, unfortunately, that we work. Professionalism is involved. The good news is preparing well and being professional in your attitude prevents thousands and thousands of accidents from happening.
Okay, let's talk about that. When you say being professional in your attitude, what exactly do you mean?
Well, professional in your attitude starts with your technical knowledge. You're constantly devoted to lifetime learning and study. You're making the proper preparations before each flight, and strict adherence to checklists as you go through, and not pressing the envelope. What I see in a lot of the accidents I work is a pressing the envelope of some type, trying to fly too low, too fast, with not a good enough weather. You know, there's dozens and dozens of ways to press the envelope. Unfortunately, that's what pilots tend to do. We have a get it done attitude, and we have it's a strong urge to press the envelope that you have to be careful with as a professional.
So and one of them, go ahead.
I was going to say, pressing the envelope often leads to bad decisions.
That's absolutely correct.
Well, it looked like a good idea at the time.
That's exactly what they say, too.
That's the problem right there.
There it is.
So number one would be get home-itis.
Get home-itis is certainly a big one. I would say get home on time-itis turns into a big issue when time starts creeping up on you, and there's just an incredible urge as a human to be where you want to be at the time that you want to be there.
It is a lot of pressure, and in the charter world, that can be a major problem, because what happens is the client will tell the pilot, look, I don't care what the weather is, we're going. And you're trying to dispel this attitude, as well as teach us general aviation guys, hey, there is nothing out there worth your life.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's so important to take a step back and try to think of the big picture of this. The client obviously doesn't know all the details that you do about why it might not be a good idea to go right away.
Yeah, you have to inform them, but you also have to inform yourself. You have to decide on personal limits. Like, no, I'm just not going to do that. But you're saying that most of us, our personal limits aren't conservative enough.
There are situations where they aren't, certainly.
Yeah, that's the issue.
And that includes Calabasas.
Okay, we all
that
know.
That was Kobe Bryant.
Right, which was a tragedy.
Oh, certainly it was.
For everybody.
Certainly was.
And the one thing you were saying offline, I didn't realize it was a large helicopter. I thought it was like a Jet Ranger or something.
No,
correct.
It was a Sikorsky S-76B,
which is a big
beast.
Boy. I mean, the clouds should be afraid of that thing.
You would think.
Didn't work out.
No, it didn't. And the thing of it being is that from what I read in the report, the pilot, A, figured he could do this, and B, he was pressing the envelope a bit during this flight. I mean, he was way faster than he should have been going on this.
That's correct. He'd fallen behind time. Air traffic control had some issues because of the weather, so he's fallen behind his schedule, and he kept his speed up throughout the entire encounter as he approached the weather. About 140 knots approaching the weather, which was, you know, certainly his mental attitude was getting there and getting there quick when he really needed to slow down and even land.
Yeah, he needed to.
So the overused phrase pilot error really does figure into a lot of incidents.
Right, decision making for sure.
Yeah, okay.
Well, he definitely made a bad decision, that's for sure. One of the things that I noticed in the report was special VFR. He called for special VFR. He had, I think it was 1,400-foot ceiling and 2.5 miles of visibility. Now, normally in a flat area such as Kansas, that's not a bad thing, but he's flying out here in California in the foothills, and there's cumulogranite out there. And that's where he got into trouble. He got into the clouds, and kaboom.
You yourself are a pilot.
That's correct.
So let's talk about your personal minimums and how you avoid get-home-itis and things like that. What can we learn from you?
You know, I try to stick, the Air Force has pretty, my background is in the Air Force, about 25 years in the Air Force. And we used 1,500 foot in 3 miles, which sounds really, really conservative, correct? So I just try to stick with that conservative weather minimum situation.
It served you well.
It served me well. Yeah, I mean, it means you don't go sometimes.
Now,
that's just what it
takes.
Have you
flown your wife and had to explain that to her? There's a problem.
Well,
that could be tough.
Special VFR, too. There are aircraft out there. I don't think I'd want to be flying under special VFR because, 3 miles of visibility isn't a lot if you're flying, say, a fast jet. That's literally seconds of visibility before you go through the area and into another part. And, in the foothills of California, seconds can make the difference.
Sure. And lower visibility is certainly appropriate for helicopters a lot of times because you can go slower.
Right.
You can land if you need to. So there's a lot of situations where
you have options.
You have options. Lower visibility is fine. In the case of this special VFR, it was because of the Class B airspace at the Burbank Airport, as I recall, that the special VFR was needed. It's certainly pushing the visibility to the point in the accident of actually penetrating the cloud layers when the operation was not certificated for IFR was a decision-making issue.
And looking through the report, it turns out that the pilot, although he had tons of training and over 8,200 hours of flight time and 1,250 in the S-76, his actual IFR time was not that much.
That's right. The pilot was very, very capable. He would not have been flying this client if he wasn't. He was highly, highly thought of. He was the chief pilot for the operation. He was the check airman for the operation. So very highly thought of pilot. Over 8,500 total hours. And
well, let's talk about that because now everybody's thinking, well, how could he not have all that IFR training if he's been with them for years?
That's a good question. It's very, very common in the helicopter community to fly almost exclusively VFR. In fact, this operation had no IFR certification, was not authorized to fly IFR, and that's not uncommon at all. Certainly the helicopters that travel out to the oil and gas industry, there's certain operations that are qualified to fly IFR, but not this one. And that's why his IMC time, how often he'd flown in the weather, was fairly low, is because his operation just didn't do it.
Right. So it's not a failure of training. It just he didn't need it because they don't fly IMC.
Right. But you have to have that discipline to not do it when the situation
when it crops
arises.
Up. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So he well, make it, that. If he'd have had more IMC experience, this might not have happened.
Correct. Potentially.
Yeah. Was the aircraft equipped for IFR?
It was, but the operation was not certificated for IFR.
Right, so it just, in other words, it came with the helicopter, but we can't use it, sort of. Yeah, we don't do that.
I wonder,
it goes back to trading. He hadn't really flown that much IFR. The operation hadn't flown that much IFR, and for that reason, the operation's only certificated for VFR.
You know, another point comes up, too. He might not have been current for IFR operations either, aren't there? There are currency limits on IFR.
Certainly.
So, California, the weather's beautiful. We don't need it.
Except in San Francisco.
Yep.
They get fog up there all the time.
Yep. So this is a lessons learned thing that ties in with your program of increase your professionalism.
Right. This week we're encouraging our tagline is fly like a pro, doing the right thing when no one's watching. Pretend like the FAA inspector's on your airplane with you.
Right.
I don't think I'd take off.
do the right thing. I think a lot of times we think the right thing is to get there no matter what. And that's not the right thing.
No. There are times in real life and other venues and circumstances where you can't do that. You've got to look at the big picture.
Sure.
I guess the old airmail culture is still out there. Seat of the pants, get it done, do no matter what.
Yeah, but there were a lot of them that were lost.
Oh, sure, there were a lot of them that lost.
Well, it's natural as pilots, we want to please the customer. If we have a customer, We want to please a client. We want to help them accomplish what they want to do. So it takes that maturity and that discipline. Almost pretend like you're a doctor. Are you really going to do this surgery if it has some risk to it? Is it worth the risk that you're taking?
Now, right now we're talking about professionalism and decision-making in regards to weather. But what about aircraft condition? You do a pre-flight and something, maybe, but I'll get it fixed later. I'm okay with that. How does this professionalism attitude apply to those situations?
Well, it certainly applies in a great way. When you think about the higher levels of aviation, either air carrier, the military, they have a system that it's not just the pilot that decides whether the aircraft is worthy, right? There's a dispatcher for the air carrier systems that releases the aircraft along with the captain. General aviation doesn't necessarily have that in a lot of cases. So that rests on the pilot to put himself in the place of that dispatcher. Would he really release that aircraft if he was that dispatcher, and take that extra level of caution to work through all the aircraft issues?
Yeah, I guess especially since a lot of GA sits in the hangar for weeks, a month, and then you decide to go fly. So you don't know what's happened to it.
Yeah,
hangar
queens are definitely a risk to be considered as you're getting ready to go.
They're not your best friend.
Well, there's just a lot there that can go wrong, and you never know when it's going to go wrong. And with a hangar queen, you know, they just sit there and age, seals dry out, all kinds of goofy things happen.
Yep.
You just never know.
Where can we find you on the field here at Oshkosh?
So tomorrow I'll be giving a presentation on Calabasas at the FAA Safety Center at 8:30, tomorrow being Saturday. And I encourage any pilots that are interested in Calabasas or understand a little bit more about their mental attitudes, considerations there to come to that presentation. Otherwise, the NTSB has a booth in Hangar D that we'd certainly like to interact with you there.
All right. Do you have information regarding this on the internet?
We do. We do. Our entire schedule of presentations is on the EAA website.
Okay.
Terrific.
Well, Mike Folkerts from the NTSB, thank you for coming with us today and putting up with us. I'm Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie, and this is EAA Radio.